My name is Valerie Shirley, and I am a teacher of the deaf and hard of hearing. I got my teacher's degree, which is a master's in education of deaf and hard of hearing students at the University of Minnesota. I got interested in deaf education when my son became deaf. My son, who is 9 years old, actually he'll be 10 years old next month, April 30th. When he was born hearing and healthy. And at 4 months old, he caught bacterial meningitis. Due to that, he got brain damage, hearing loss, so became deaf. And in addition to being deaf, he has special needs as well. I was a general education teacher at the time, and I started to go to school to learn sign language because I figured that would be the only way I'd be able to communicate with him. Fell in love with the language and decided to change my career and enter the master's degree program at the University of Minnesota, and now become a teacher of deaf and hard of hearing and work with other deaf Muslims in the community as well. Well, actually, I work with deaf in the Muslim community and in the general population. Because I'm a teacher of deaf and hard of hearing and I teach with public school students, I work with deaf children and adults from all denominations, religious and cultural backgrounds. The work that I do with a nonprofit organization is Global Deaf Muslim. That work is generally with deaf Muslims. We have a large Somali community here, and out of that community, there's a number of deaf adults and children that really didn't have access to language the way that the deaf students do here when they were in their home country. And they came here and began to learn American Sign Language and things like that. And that really opened up a new world for me, because before my son was deaf, I didn't realize how limited his access would be to Islamic teaching. Once I realized that there was almost no way for him to learn unless I teach him one-to-one, I got really interested and I started to search around on the internet for other deaf Muslims, because I thought to myself, there's got to be other deaf Muslims. I contacted people and finally made contact with a deaf man from Ghana. He's Muslim, and he is who actually started the organization, Global Deaf Muslim. And I actually got in contact with him, I think, in 2006. And I've been working with him off and on since then, and now I have this huge network of deaf Muslims that I've become acquainted with, actually across the globe. They're in Australia and Dubai, and we all keep in touch electronically through Facebook and through email and video phones. It's a nonprofit organization, and their main goal is to give the deaf Muslims throughout the U.S. and across the globe eventually access to their religious teachings. We have a project going on right now where we're fundraising around the U.S. in order to translate the Holy Quran into American. Quran has been translated into many different languages, but never ASL. And so this is kind of a little bit of a historical event for us, pretty groundbreaking, and we're excited about that. Locally, we just opened an office in St. Paul. So Global Deaf Muslim has headquarters in Maryland, and the first branch office opened here in St. Paul in January. But locally, we're going to have American Sign Language classes for hearing people that want to learn how to communicate with the deaf, and not just hearing Muslims. Anybody is welcome to come. We are also going to have driver's ed classes for deaf Muslims or deaf individuals who feel like they need the extra help. We're going to have them in ASL so that they can access the class in their language. I am originally from Chicago. I grew up in Chicago, Illinois. My mom grew up in Chicago as well. I moved here to Minnesota in 1997. So I did all of my high school and some college in Chicago. Most of my family is still there. I moved here in 97 to get away from the crime in Chicago. I grew up in a pretty tough neighborhood, and it was drug infested and, you know, gang ridden. So I didn't want my kids to grow up in that environment. When I was married at the time, and my ex-husband had a close friend who lived here in Minnesota, and he came to visit him, and he was just like, wow, Minnesota's a much better place to live. We should really move there. And so even though I was very deeply rooted in Chicago and didn't want to leave my family behind, that was, you know, I felt like I was a big help to the family, and I just said, gave it a chance, came to Minnesota, and life has actually been better. It's been a lot easier for me to raise my kids and a lot easier for me to finish my degrees at school. And I have 5 children now, the youngest 3 months, the oldest 24. And when I changed my career, because I finished my education degree here and changed to go into deaf education, I started to learn sign language and taught everybody at home sign language so they could communicate with their brother. And, you know, out of that, all of my children are fluent in sign, with the exception of the newborn baby. We're working on her. And my oldest daughter, who's 24, is actually a licensed sign language interpreter. And so our entire lives have just kind of been around the deaf community since that little guy got sick. It's been a real dynamic change, but a big blessing, too. You know, as hard as it was to take care of him at times, I really see a great blessing in it. He opened up an entire world for us that I wouldn't have even known existed had he not lost his hearing.
So tell me about the support medically and in the community that you found when you learned that your son was going to be deaf.
I didn't really know what to do. And a close friend of mine told me, you've got to tell people what's going on. And so finally, things got so overwhelming, and then I was like, okay, I'm just going to tell people. And I got online, and I sent out an email to a group that I belong to that we used to have. We called them Holikas, which means circle. And it was like a circle of learning. We would have a religious circle of learning every Saturday, and the group had gotten kind of big from everybody putting their email on it. And so I just sent out an email and told them that my son was sick and how, you know, what he had went through and what we were going through. And I got all these emails back, people telling me, oh, what can we do for you? And I would say, oh, no, nothing, it's okay. And they were like, we know you're not able to clean up and cook with all this going on. And I just had all of a sudden this revolving door of women in the community who came and folded my laundry, cleaned my house, cooked for us, took care of the babies, because I also have an 11-year-old, so at the time he was 2. While his brother was 5 months and going through all this, so he didn't have any attention all of a sudden. Everybody had their attention on the sick baby. And they would take the babies and stay in the apartment for us, and we could actually go out and see a movie, me and the 2 bigger girls, or do something. And, you know, the support that I got from the community was phenomenal to me. I had never experienced that before, you know, not outside of blood relatives, you know. So that was pretty amazing. And for a good 6 months, that went on like that until I was able to just really stabilize and take care of everything myself. And even after that, I built such a bond with the community that I got to know people so well. We just continued friendships beyond that, and relationships and the acquaintances turned into really strong bonds and a support system. And of course, I've tried to pay that forward and help as many people as I can, you know. So I was raised a Baptist Christian. When I say I was raised a Baptist Christian, we didn't really go to church that much. You know, it was kind of what we put on an application. You know, it's like, it's your religion, Baptist. And I remember getting dressed up on Easter and going out with my grandmother, but never remember her taking me to church. I remember she and my grandpa would go to church, but me and my mom and my brothers, we didn't really frequent churches, maybe every now and then. When I turned about 16, during the times of, they call storm and stress for your teenage years, I was having what I thought were so many problems at home, you know, and I remember one of the older ladies in the community saying, you just need to find Jesus. You just need to get Jesus in your life. And so I took that to heart, you know. It's like, maybe I do. Maybe that's what I need to do. That's going to fix my life. And my closest brother, who is very, very religious, and he's deeply embedded in the Christian faith, he used to tell me, when you feel like you're in trouble, just read your Bible. And he gave me a Bible and told me, just read it, you know, and ask God to guide your heart. And so hearing the older lady say, you just need Jesus, and hearing my brother say, you know, just read your Bible, I said, okay, maybe that's what I need to do. And I remember at the age of 16 praying and just asking God to guide me and fix all the things in my life. I remember my mom being angry at me, and I didn't want her to be angry at me. I wanted to be best friends with her like we used to be. And so at the age of 16, I started reading the Bible actually myself. And I read it from cover to cover over a period of about 3 years. So I'm just going to be a follower of God and pray to God to guide me. And I went on to start to study different religions. I studied Judaism. I studied with Jehovah's Witnesses. Figured I had already known about Christianity. And I studied even, like, I went into the history books and tried to study, like, the religions of the old Israelites and, you know, black Hebrews and things like that. Because when I was taking African history in school, you know, people would tell me that, you know, who knows what my ancestors' religions were. And so I tried to go back and see what that may have been. And that didn't really turn up anything too interesting. And I didn't study Islam because I lived on 71st and Stony Island in Chicago. On 73rd and Stony Island was temple number 75. I'm not sure what number it was, but it was of the Nation of Islam. And I felt like that's not what I want to study, because everything that I had seen, I respected the Nation of Islam because they cleaned up the community and the brothers looked very upright in their bow ties and they were very respectful. But things like that I had learned, like, you can't eat sweet potatoes. I love sweet potatoes. And things like the white man is the devil. Some of my closest friends were white. You know, some of the things I was like, that's definitely not what I want to study. But little did I know, that wasn't really Islam. That wasn't mainstream Islam. That is more, I guess you would say, an Islamic sect. And at the time, I didn't know, so I didn't even bother to study Islam. But I became this religionless girl who was a believer of God, and I thought I was on the right path. That led up to my husband becoming Muslim. At the time, he's my ex-husband now. But he became Muslim, not through me. He became Muslim through a guy he met who gave him a free cab ride. So they talk in the car in exchange, you know, and he's going on about his, you know, the distress of the black man, which is really real. I'm not diminishing it in any way, but, you know, he's just going and on about it. And the cab driver's listening and saying, you know, that talking to him that there's peace in that, you know, that the things that other people do to you, you have no control over. You can only control yourself, and don't let yourself be engulfed by negative emotion and anger and all this kind of stuff. So my ex-husband, who is my children's father, you know, said, wow, you know, that's really insightful. He was like, you seem like a really peaceful guy. You know, he's like, I'd love to have that kind of peace. I don't want to feel like this. And that's when the guy told him, you know, my peace comes through my connection with my creator. And that's when he found out the guy was Muslim. He's like, wow, he was really interested. So he started to study Islam, and he decided to convert to Islam. And we moved to Minnesota, and he was embedded in the Muslim community, and I was still studying what I thought I should be studying. You know, had no idea I would ever embrace Islam. But I went to a lecture at the University of Minnesota. They have something that's, now they call it Islamic Awareness Week. I don't know if that's what it was called back in 1998. But the title of it was Muhammad in the Bible and Jesus in the Quran. And when I learned about what the Quran says about Jesus that day, I was amazed, because the story of Jesus is that, you know, he's the divine messenger of God and one of the most revered prophets of our Creator. And I was just really amazed, and it opened up doors for me that hadn't been opened, because, like I told you, what I thought was Islam, you know, I stayed away from it intentionally. And so with that kind of information, and then learning that the Quran says all the believers can attain paradise, you know, and it didn't put a label on the believers. It didn't say all the believers that are Muslim, all the believers that are Christian, all the believers that are Jew. It said all the believers, you know. And so I was just really taken aback by that. And I went home with that information. All this information, it sounds so real. It sounds so what I believe, because everything that I had studied metaphysically up till that point, it seemed like Islam confirmed. And I was like, what do I do with this? And I went to sleep that night and had all kinds of weird dreams about people chasing me with religious texts. And, you know, and I woke up the next morning and I decided to become Muslim. So that was my long story, my journey to Islam, and also journey to Minnesota, because I actually became Muslim here in Minnesota. I was not Muslim in Chicago. Yeah, personal experiences that I had that were challenging were just the fact that I guess people were so ignorant about Islam, and that I was being labeled as something I was not was a real personal challenge for me because, you know, having somebody scream, go back to your country, when I know this is where I was born and raised was like, what are you talking about? You know, having people try to run you off the road and throw things at you and, you know, just shout curse words. Personally, my challenges were small compared to some of the things that I know others went through. But I think that if I speak to 9/11, I think the biggest challenge for me was how I felt inside about the whole thing. When 9/11 happened, I didn't know how to feel. I felt sad for the loss of life, but I also felt this weird sense of the government is getting what it's been dishing out to other people. And it made me feel uneasy with myself and who I was, because all my life, before I became Muslim, it was like the government was the enemy. You know, it wasn't like white people were the enemy or one culture of people. It was like the system is the enemy. The system is what's oppressing, and the system has to be destroyed. You know, that was my train of thought, you know. So when not even knowing, you know, the dynamics of what had happened and what it would turn into, I remember sitting at home. I think I was homeschooling, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And someone told me to turn on the news, turn on the TV. And I went to turn it on. And as I turned it on, it's the footage of the airplane actually hitting, you know, one of the Twin Towers. And I remember, I was like, what is this? And I turned it up. And I remember them saying that there's also reports of a plane hitting the Pentagon. And my thought in my mind at that time, Allah forgive me, was, look at that. They're hitting them in the government and in the pocket. I'm like, because that's where they know. I didn't know who was doing it or what was going on. I didn't know it was going to be blamed on Muslims or anything. I just thought, somebody's finally trying to attack the government and take them out for all the wrong they've done across the globe. And then when I found out that it was so-called Muslims who had done it and they were trying to pin this on the whole Islamic community, I just didn't know how to feel. I felt sad that I even had those first thoughts of, that's what they get. You know, when I heard how many people died and, you know, and the families and the testimonials, I felt kind of sick inside for even feeling like I should have never even thought that's what somebody should get. Nobody should get that. So personally, that whole experience sent me soul searching. Because, you know, I was like, why? I shouldn't have had to hear the testimonials and hear about how many people died. I should have automatically felt a love for humanity and known that there was going to be a loss of life for this, and I should have felt sorry instantly. I shouldn't have felt anything else. So that sent me kind of on a personal soul-searching thing. I've never told anybody that. I guess my way to build bridges mainly is to always be pleasant in my every encounter with anybody I run into. No matter how they treat me or how they are toward me, I do my best to treat them with kindness and a smile. You know, even if they curse me, I'll smile and wave at them. You know, I have people driving next to me. Maybe I cut them off. Who knows what happened? And they flip me the bird or whatever, and I smile and wave at them. And finding commonalities and where there were differences, agreeing to disagree respectfully. Experience of being a Muslim in Minnesota it's been a wonderful experience for me overall. There were some difficulties, like the uneasiness when I first became Muslim and I found out, you know, when I came into Islam and I was like, there are no color lines anymore. That's wonderful to me, having to fight discrimination all my life. You know, I was like, I don't have to fight anymore. Finding out that there was discrimination in the Muslim community was a challenge for me. It was really hard, and because I didn't want to have to fight in my own community where I'm supposed to be safe and supported in order to get fair treatment. So that was a little bit discouraging. But we've built bridges, and I mean, things like 9/11 brought all the Muslims together, you know, inevitably, you know. So I guess, but overall, it's been a wonderful experience. And then when I became Muslim, everyone wanting to support me and help me and do things for me and give me things that I didn't have and take me places that I need to go if I didn't have a car. It was pretty overwhelming. So becoming Muslim is like I joined a family, you know, a billion strong that I can call on in any time of need to help me when I need help in any area of life, and they can call on me as well. So that's the experience for me, mostly overall.